Our third speaker is Joan P. Gibbs. Joan is a longtime activist, attorney, and writer. She's represented or done support work for a number of political prisoners, including Herman Ferguson and the Cuban Five. She's a member of the New York City chapter of the National Conference of Black Lawyers, and she also works with the July 26 Coalition. Joan will share her views on what impact the shift in policy could have on political prisoners from the U.S. that Cuba has given asylum to. In addition, Joan will discuss the history of African diaspora support of Cuba.
Thank you. Thanks to Gil for inviting me and for organizing this program. I'm going to try to be brief so that we have enough time to have the conversation. Since the triumph of the Cuban Revolution in January 1959, political activists in the United States who were fearful of escaping persecution have sought refuge in Cuba. For example, Robert Williams was one of the first to go. Robert Williams, in case you don't know who he was charged in 1960 or 61 with kidnapping and other charges related to his activities in organizing against white supremacy and racism in Monroe, North Carolina. Robert Williams and his wife, Mabel Williams, lived and continued their work in Cuba from 1961 to 1965. While there, with the assistance of the Cuban government, the Williams established Radio Free Dixie, from which they regularly broadcast addresses to black people living in the South, published a newspaper, The Crusader, and also it was in Cuba where Robert Williams wrote his infamous Negro with Guns. In the years since, numerous African Americans, as well as other political activists from the United States, have sought refuge and been granted refuge in Cuba. Among them, Eldridge Cleaver, Kathleen Cleaver, Huey Newton, Gilberto Morales, Nihanda Abedun, and perhaps most famously, Assata Shakur. In the aftermath of the December 17th announcement by Cuban President Raul Castro and President Obama that the two countries would be seeking to reestablish relations, the release of the remaining incarcerated members of the Cuban Five, Cuba's release of Alan Gross and another U.S. Cuban spy, social media was afire with expressions of concern, questions about the fate of political prisoners in Cuba, in particular that of Assata Shakur. Some worried or expressed concern that Assata might be returned to the United States. Assata has a bounty on her head of $2 million. And 2013, Assata was placed on the FBI's most wanted terrorist list. And the bounty, which at the time was $1 million, was increased to $2 million when New Jersey added an additional $1 million. I know most of you know who Assata Shakur is, right? So I don't have to tell you about Assata. But if you don't know too much about her, I would urge you to read her autobiography and the autobiography of her aunt, Evelyn Williams, Inadmissible Evidence. I really recommend that you read Evelyn's book. Evelyn was, as I said, she was Assata's aunt and also was an attorney throughout most of her criminal journey in New York. I'm going to focus mostly on Assata because this is her case that is most well-known and has been the most attention of activists. Although I will say that what I'm going to talk about her applies to other political prisoners that have been granted asylum in Cuba as well. New Jersey has repeatedly asked for Cuba to return Assata. And some, including recently indicted New Jersey Senator Melendez, have insisted that normalization of relationship with Cuba be conditioned on the return of Assata and other political prisoners in Cuba. The Cubans have said emphatically that issues of Assata's return is off the table. Now, a lot of people think, okay, well, they said that. But really, you know, the right of states, sovereign nations, to grant asylum is well established in international law as well as in regional instruments. Every sovereign state is deemed to have exclusive control of its territory and over the persons therein. Article 14.1 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, for example, provides, in pertinent part, a right for individuals facing persecution to enjoy in other countries asylum from persecution. Article 1 of the Declaration on Territorial Asylum, which was adopted by the General Assembly of the United Nations in 1967, provides that asylum granted by a state in the exercise of its sovereignty to persons entitled to invoke it under Article 14 of the Universal Declaration of Civil Rights shall be respected by all other states. Further, Article 1.3 of the Declaration vests the state of asylum, the state in which people are seeking asylum, with the authority to, quote, evaluate the grounds for the grant of asylum. The right of individuals to seek asylum is also enshrined in several international and regional instruments, including the Universal Declaration, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, and the European Convention for the Protection of Human Rights and Fundamental Freedoms. International law, likewise, counsels against a state returning a refugee to a place of persecution. Support for that can be found in the convention related to the international status of refugees. That said, I am not, and in fact have never really been worried about Cuba returning asylum. Cuba has been the staunchest supporter of African and African people, including people in the diaspora, since the revolution. When Africa called, Cuba answered in Angola, elsewhere, and most recently in the fight against Ebola. Cuba has been said by, among others, the late President Nelson Mandela, substantially contributed to the end of colonialism and apartheid in Southern Africa. In return, African people throughout the world, including in the United States, have been staunch supporters of Cuba. During President Fidel's last two visits to the United States, to New York, to the UN, I, along with other African-American activists, including one who was in the room, Myrna, hi Myrna, welcome him and organized speaking engagements for him at the Abyssinian Baptist Church and at Riverside Church. They were attended by hundreds of people. However, all of that said, historically and still, the United States has not been noted for its respect for either state sovereignty or international law. Anybody disagree with that? The most glaring example of that to me at the moment, and people may disagree with me, is Venezuela and what they're doing to Venezuela. And in fact, I think it's an attempt to overthrow the Venezuelan government. But I am worried, and I must admit, for Asada and others, and particularly Asada, because of the bounty on her head. The bounty hunters will attempt to kidnap her. But, however, I trust in the security apparatus of our Cuban friends because they successfully protected Fidel for over 200 assassination attempts. I wouldn't advise going to Cuba to kidnap them. With that, I want to conclude by suggesting several things that we in the United States should do or should be doing. One, we have to support and defend the Cuban revolution and the end of the blockade or embargo. To that end, I urge you to support IFCO and the July 26th Coalition of New York and New Jersey. Second, we have to demand that the United States respects Cuban sovereignty, international law, Cuba's grant of asylum to Asada and others who have fled prosecution in the United States. The United States has to respect that and that we should make them do that. At the same time, we should demand the United States remove Asada, who is now 67 years old, from the FBI's most wanted terrorist list, and that the $2 million bounty on her head be dropped. And finally, because I think that this is something that I wasn't asked to talk about, but I will, we need to take up and pick up the work to free the remaining political prisoners in the United States, including Oscar Lopez Rivera, Leonard Peltier, Saniata Coley, who was SADA's co-defendant, and Mumia Abu-Jamal, and Move 9. They have been in prison for over 30 years for the murder of a single Philadelphia police officer. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Joan.
I just want to say, with respect to Venezuela, you know, I guess earlier this week, a couple of days ago, the president did the sanctions and said that Venezuela was a threat to the national security of the United States. Now, that's obviously false. Venezuela is not a threat to the national security of the United States. And, you know, so, I mean, I'm worried about Venezuela, I'll honestly admit to you, because the U.S. media since the commencement has played such a prominent role in portraying and misportraying what's going on in Venezuela. You know, when those demonstrations started, you know, we in the United States, I don't know why we do this, but we get up in arms when we see what we, young people in the streets, right? These were young, petty bourgeois Venezuelans demonstrating against the government, right? Reminded me of what happened in Chile, because I'm old enough to remember how people came with pots and pans, women, to overthrow Allende. That's what they were doing. And people fell for it. I mean, I had arguments with people about, oh, listen, people are starving in Chile. Nope. This was the CIA trying to overthrow Chile. And that's what they're doing in Venezuela. And what we need to do is be about having forums, demonstration, and educating people and exposing that. Because we can't rely on the New York Times. Because the New York Times has been the ringleader in this campaign against Venezuela. You know, and then we have Joan in Miami, I understand. I'm not a fan of Miami, and I don't go there. But I'm told that there's all these Venezuelans who have fled from Venezuela to Miami, you know, and they just, you know, organize against Venezuela too and other places. And so I am worried about Venezuela because I think people really don't understand. And they're not taking the time to see what's going on. But I will say this, Venezuela still remains one of the top suppliers of oil to the United States. Yeah. So with that, but we really should be more active around Venezuela because otherwise they will succeed. Because they have definitely succeeded in convincing students that a lot of young people and old that Venezuela is, there's no democracy in Venezuela, you know, all of that.
Gentlemen.